Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge out in Winnipeg. Hodge, I got to say, your most recent article about the Blue Bombers talked about them and the free agents that you think they should make a priority to re-sign. I should say pending free agents. How was Evan Holm not your feature image, bro?
Well,
what's wrong with you? You talk about this guy being the most underrated player in the CFL, and your feature image is Dalton Schoen.
Well, Dalton Schoen is a nice picture. Who doesn't know Dalton Schoen? Who doesn't like Dalton Schoen? Why are you hating on Dalton Schoen, Dunk?
I'm not hating on Dalton Schoen. I'm just saying, you talk about Evan Holm being one of the most underrated, if not the most underrated player in the league, and then you put Dalton Schoen as a feature image. Dalton Schoen, nice fella. Nothing against him. I'm just busting your chops. That's all.
That's fair. The picture that we have that's probably the best quality picture of Evan Holm is him looking down at the ground looking very sad. So I'm like, well, that can't be the feature image. I'm not sure if he was actually feeling sad or he just looked sad in that particular moment. I'm not here to try to judge people's emotional state based on photos that were taken 6 months ago. But I do agree that he is one of the most underrated players in the CFL. I've been saying that for 2 years, though. I do think, I mean, he was named All-West Division in 2023. I think that is changing. I think people do know who he is now. But there was a time, especially last year, where nobody knew who this guy was. And I mean, he's a white DB who played at North Dakota, originally from a suburb in Minneapolis. I get it, right? That doesn't scream star player, but he's a very good player. And I think he's going to get paid in free agency, whether it's in Winnipeg or elsewhere.
I like what you said there. All West Division. Note CFL head office.
Well, that's what we're calling it in our copy. I say all East Division or all West Division. I'm not saying all CFL West Division or all CFL East Division or East Division all CFL or West Division all CFL. That means nothing. It's all CFL and then all East Division, all West Division. Done.
Simple, concise.
Yeah.
That's what we do at 3downnation.com. You're right about Evan Holm, though. He is a legit star. Boy, he's going to get paid. We'll see if Cody Fajardo gets paid after his comments following Montreal re-signing Davis Alexander.
We will also see our conversation about the CFL's illegal interference rule.
Canadian quarterback Curtis Rourke leading Indiana into the college football playoff.
Rene Parrott is re-upping with the Calgary Stampeders.
New Tiger Cats GM Ted Gavea saying that he knows about Hamilton's long Grey Cup drought.
And QB Mason Nias returning to his alma mater. But first, Trey Ford and Trevor Harris have signed contract extensions to remain in Edmonton and Saskatchewan, respectively. Ford is tied to the Elks through 2026 and is set to earn legitimate CFL starter money, while Harris re-upped on a one-year deal in Saskatchewan for 2024. Which team got the better deal and why?
Dude, this is a really intriguing and difficult question, which is what we usually pose to people at 3downnation.com. So I like how you've turned the tables here, Hodge, and put us on the hot seat. And the key to get this answer is going to be the contractual information. Now, I asked Trevor Harris to describe his contract from his standpoint and the value as it relates to the Canadian Football League salary cap. And he said, if you put me in the top tier, then he feels like it's a team-friendly deal. And based on my sourcing on this deal, and the details are still to come at 3downnation.com, I do think it's a value for Trevor Harris. And there's a point to be made here about him. A lot of people in Rider Nation and even around the CFL, Hodge, have said, well, Trevor Harris is 38 years old. He's going to turn 39 before the 2025 season is going to start. But if you look at his career, he was a backup for a while. You know, he was down in the NFL. I think he played some indoor football too, if I'm not mistaken. And he still is young in football terms despite his age, if that makes sense, meaning he hasn't played as much football as your average 38, 39-year-old football player, which is rare in and of itself. And in this day and age, we have seen players, mostly quarterbacks, play high-level football into their 40s. Henry Burris was able to do it in the Canadian Football League, just to name one. Obviously, Tom Brady, the best of all time in the National Football League, was able to do it into his mid-40s. So I think that the Riders got a good value deal. But when I look at Trey Ford's contract, I think that he got a fair deal based on his upside and also what he means to that franchise in terms of ticket interest. I think that is a real key when you look at Trey Ford re-signing in Edmonton. Full credit to Larry Thompson, everybody on down in that organization for understanding what he means to that market. So I'm kind of dancing around the question a little bit. I might lean towards Trey Ford because his deal is costing less from what I understand. But Trevor Harris is no doubt at this point in time the more proven commodity.
I appreciate what you said about questions, because I think that that's something that some of the people to whom we pose difficult questions forget sometimes, is that we get tough questions all the time. And that's not even behind closed doors. That's like radio interviews. Like, I know you're always on different shows, different stations. I get requests a fair amount. Sometimes there'll be like a week that goes by and I get nothing. And I'm like, man, I guess I just suck. And then the next week I'll get like 17.
You don't suck.
Well, no, I don't suck, but I'll get like 17, and it's like, okay, I don't suck, and this is too many. Let's try to find a sweet spot. But I remember one time, this was, and I won't say the name of the individual who asked me this question, but it was shortly after Simon Fraser canceled its football program, and I'd done an interview with the AD there, who has since resigned from her job, but I got asked live on the radio. It's like, well, don't you think this person should just be fired? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I talked to this person one time. How do you answer that question live on radio for presumably tens of thousands of people listening? Hey, should this lady you talked to one time be fired? It's like that. And I'm pretty sure I dodged it. And then they asked it again. But seriously, though, do you think she should be fired? And I'm like, wow. So we know what it is to give tough questions, but we also know what it is to get tough questions. Speaking of this tough question, by the way, Trevor Harris, Arizona Rattlers, Hartford Colonels, Sacramento Mountain Lions, and Orlando Predators alum. Some of those teams are indoor teams. I don't know if all four of them are, but yes, many stints in different lower level American leagues before coming up to the CFL. Getting back to the important question, though, Trey Ford's deal is less money. That being said, Trevor Harris played at an all-CFL level this past season when healthy. Had a bit of a slow start, then got hurt. But after that, he had the Saskatchewan Roughriders offense humming. Now, that didn't translate into the West Final.
I don't think he had a slow start, though. He was leading the league in passing yards and passing touchdowns before he got hurt.
Well, let me look it up. He had a slow start in 2023. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I think that's what you're thinking of.
That might be what I'm thinking of. 2024, first game, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. Second game, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Third game, 2 touchdowns, 1. Okay, pretty good start for Trevor Harris. Had over 300 yards in 2 of his first 3 games. So, okay, fair enough. Had a good season.
Dude, that third game, he was hurt just before halftime. Let's not forget that.
I didn't remember when that injury happened. Though, should be said, these games were against Edmonton and Hamilton, two teams that didn't defend much of anything in 2024, but fair enough. Good start to the season. Good rest of the regular season. Good West semifinal for Trevor Harris. A very good performance against a BC Lions defense that struggled a bit at times, but hey, you beat the team that's in front of you. I do feel like this might be better value for the Saskatchewan Roughriders because they feel like a win now team. We're going into year 2 of Corey Mace. Trevor Harris is 38 going on 39. I will agree with what you said, Justin. He is very young for his age. He takes tremendous care of his body. He's got relatively low mileage to his age, so his age doesn't particularly worry me. But it was also clear that he was not going to hit that 450 to 500 number that he hit in hard money the last couple years after two injury plagued seasons. He's only played, I believe it's 22 regular season games over the last 2 years. And when you talk to agents or you talk to people around the league, the thing, 17 games the last 2 years, he's basically missed half. The thing that they'll tell you is the number one thing that hurts you in contract negotiations is injuries, right? If you can't stay on the field, then you're not going to get paid. And to Trevor Harris's credit, through the first long portion of his career, this was not a concern, right? He was not somebody who missed a lot of time. This has been something that has only really happened the last 2 years in Saskatchewan. Hopefully, especially if that offensive line plays a little better in 2025, he'll be able to stay a little healthier in 2025. But I really like the situation for the Riders. I do, however, also like the Edmonton Elks here with Trey Ford. The fans at Edmonton have been screaming for continuity. They've been screaming for Trey Ford. They've been screaming for ties back to their history and their local community. And I will say, I don't think it's in the best interest of teams always to listen to their fans, because fans are fans for a reason. That being said, I think the fans have been right in Edmonton for a long time now. They want local ties. They want history. They want culture. They want community. And they want Trey Ford. And finally, now with local ownership taking over, with Ed Hervey, who has won a Grey Cup previously, Mark Killam, a local guy, Jordan Maksimek running the offense, local guy, Trey Ford being the star there, a guy who owns a house at Edmonton, will be spending the offseason at Edmonton, and is now under contract through 2026. The fans at Edmonton have finally gotten what they wanted, and I think that's a win for everybody.
He's under contract through 2027, Hodge, signed that three-year deal.
Oh, pardon me, 2027.
Has some upside for him. And that's why this question's difficult for me, because I think away from football, the better value is Trey Ford for the Edmonton Elks. Though I do think that it was a fair contract all around. And I think the contract for Trevor Harris and the Riders was fair for what he's accomplished in his career. It's easy to say from a football standpoint that, you know, Trevor Harris is more proven, but I don't think that we can undersell the amount of intrigue and excitement around Edmonton about Trey Ford. That's why Larry Thompson wanted alignment from Chris Morris, Ed Hervey, Mark Killam in who their quarterback was going to be. And I think that hurt them a year ago when Chris Jones and his regime went out and signed McLeod Bethel Thompson to a contract that was worth over $400,000 in hard money and had incentives in there that were somewhat reachable to take it up over $500,000. So that essentially told Trey Ford that McLeod Bethel Thompson was a starter. Now Trey Ford can commit to the team and the community. As you mentioned, he's going to be moving there in January full-time for the offseason. He's had a house there already, but from that standpoint, he knows what he's going into. He can start scheming and getting on the same page with Jordan Maksimek and Mark Killam. And you know what I like most from the press conference announcing Trey Ford is the fact that Mark Killam was comfortable openly talking about Jordan Maksimek, even though it hasn't officially been announced by the team. Now, from what I understand, that's largely due to the way the contracts are structured for some of the coaches in the league, but he didn't shy away from it. It is what it is, right? He didn't act like, oh, well, we're going to have to confirm that before I can answer the question. It's like, no, we all understand here Jordan Maksimek is going to be the offensive coordinator. So thank you for just understanding that we're not all stupid and the fans aren't either. Everybody knows Jordan Maksimek is going to be the offensive coordinator with the Elks.
I think one thing that will play a big advantage into Trey Ford's success this upcoming year is that Steven Sorrells is back as the offensive line coach and run game coordinator in Edmonton. The Elks' run game in 2024 was unbelievable. It didn't matter if it was Justin Rankin back there, Kevin Brown back there, Trey Ford back
Javon
there,
Leak.
Javon Leak. Even when McLeod Bethel Thompson, who's not necessarily a run first guy, was in, that run game was humming. And they did that with a relatively patchwork offensive line. Like, you know, Shane Richards, former first overall pick, but a guy who didn't have a lot of success over four seasons with the Argonauts. The Toronto Argonauts were trying to trade Shane Richards for almost the entire 2023 season. They didn't really have any takers. Lo and behold, he goes to Edmonton as a guard. And that offensive line, again, alongside some patchwork pieces, Brett Boyko, a guy who just a couple years previously was on the street after underperforming in BC and Saskatchewan. all of a sudden he is playing at like an all CFL level at right tackle. So a very impressive, I think, performance from that running game. Jordan Maksimek, I think, will lean on Steven Sorrells from that perspective, because we know that Jordan Maksimek is more of a passing guy. I'm also really excited to see what happens with Jordan Maksimek and Trey Ford, as you talked about, Dunk, getting together through the winter and learning this game together, developing a system together. We know that Jordan Maksimek's system is complicated. We know that he had a ton of time to develop it with Nathan Rourke and develop alongside Nathan Rourke during their tenure together in BC. We know that Trey Ford has had success as a passer in this league, but we also, I think, know he needs to continue to improve in that regard. As much as he's on an upward trajectory, that needs to continue into 2025 and beyond. So I'm excited for what they're building here. The other thing I'll say, getting back to Trevor Harris for a moment, is once this deal with Trey Ford was done, there was really nowhere for Trevor Harris to go. And so I think, as much as his deal might be a little less than it was in 2024 going into 2025, I also think the Riders did have a little bit of leverage in that regard, saying, well, if 8 starting spots are full, and I know we're going to talk about this with Cody Fajardo in the next segment, you know, we're kind of the last starting spot. It's possible the Riders would have had interest in Trey Ford had he made it to market. That didn't happen. So we'll see. But I like these moves for both teams. And I'll also say this, for a league that has had not enough parity or not enough continuity over the last 10, 15, 20 years, especially at the quarterback position, it's nice to see incumbents like Trey Ford, like Trevor Harris, remain in those respective markets, giving fans more of an opportunity to make connections with these players, buy uniforms without fear that they're going to have to rip off the name and replace it with something new next year. And I think that's a win for the CFL as a whole.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Cody Fajardo told Nevada Sportsnet's Chris Murray he probably would have been the CFL's MVP had he not torn his hamstring this past season. Did the veteran quarterback make a valid point?
Yes and no. I mean, I'll give Cody Fajardo some flowers. He was really good to start the season in 2024. And he obviously had a hell of a Grey Cup in 2023. He was the MVP of that game, rightfully so, got the win in upset fashion. I also hate, because we always complain when athletes don't say interesting things. So I also hate ragging on guys for giving good quotes. That being said, some of this did not make a lot of sense to me. One of the quotes he said was, "We're the best team in the league all year," referring to the Alouettes. Well, they finished the regular season 2-4-1. Like, you were not the best team all year. You had the best record in the CFL at the end of the year, but you were tremendous for the first third of the season. You were very good for the second third. And then you were mediocre at best for the last third of the season. The other thing he said that I think rubbed me the wrong way a little bit was he said, quote, he was playing at an all-time level early on. All-time level. He had 10 touchdowns and 4 picks plus 1 rushing touchdown through his first 5 games. I don't know if Cody Fajardo knows who Doug Flutie is, but that is not an all-time level in the CFL. 10 touchdowns, 4 picks is good, but it's not an all-time level. That's not, it just is not. So on the one hand, I appreciate Cody Fajardo is upset about getting replaced. And I also think he deserves credit for how he started this past season. That said, I thought some of these comments were a little bit over the top, a little bit hyperbolic. And I think Cody might need to check his emotions a little bit moving forward if he wants to continue to have success in this league and with his messaging.
Hodge, you mentioned this earlier. When it comes to any player, the best ability is availability. And I understand that, you know, something like a hamstring injury can be fluky, but the reality of the situation is if Cody Fajardo was healthy for the entire season, we might not know to the extent that we do now about Davis Alexander in his upside. So you got to be able to stay on the field. And yes, some of that is fluky. I'm not putting that all at the feet of Cody Fajardo. The other point to this is, let's say Cody Fajardo was healthy all season long. Would he have really beat out Canadian running back Brady Oliveira in the voting for the CFL's MLP? Would he have beat out Bo Levi Mitchell, who set a Tiger Cats single season franchise record, by the way, with the likes of Danny McManus, who have played there in the past among some other greats, for the East Division's Most Outstanding Player Award? I'm not so sure, because a lot of the times, and we're guilty of this a little bit too, the media looks at the statistics. And with the way the Alouettes were going, you know, I don't think Cody would have got to that 5,000-yard mark to really challenge Bo Levi Mitchell. I understand where he's coming from. He was certainly a valuable part for the way that the Alouettes started the season, coming off a great 2023 Grey Cup, where he was well-deserving of the MLP and made one of the plays that is going to live in Grey Cup lore forever. That late game touchdown to Tyson Philpott. That's going to live forever. But if we're looking at the here and now with Cody Fajardo, I think that he needs to suck it up and realize that his best opportunity now and for potentially as long as he wants to play is going back to Montreal. I've had people tell me that they think that he's done there. In the way that he's talking with Nevada Sportsnet, for example, would seem to intimate that he wants to go somewhere else, a place that he feels like he could potentially compete to be a starter. But Jason Moss and Danny Machocha clearly have an affinity and an appreciation for Cody Fajardo. And sometimes in business, and football ultimately is a business, you have to make difficult decisions. And I have not heard from one coach or personnel person around the Canadian Football League telling me that the Alouettes made a stupid decision. Is it difficult to swallow if you're Cody Fajardo? Yes, but I truly believe his best situation is to renegotiate his deal and go back to Montreal for a number of reasons. He knows Jason Moss's offense. He clearly has a great relationship with Austin Mack, among others on that offense and the football team, and he knows the system. Plus, as much as I think Haji would agree, we think that Davis Alexander can be great as a CFL quarterback. There have been lots of examples in the past of guys that we thought that were going to be great with a small sample size that didn't turn out that way. I'm not saying that Davis Alexander is not going to turn into a high caliber starting quarterback, but the odds of that, based on everything else, can be slim for anyone. That's anyone. So if I'm Cody Fajardo, you know, I'm going to take a little bit of time to simmer down, look at my options, and I would go back to Montreal. Because if Davis Alexander doesn't perform well or if he gets nicked up, you know the offense, you know the people around you, you have a rapport with the receivers. I truly think that's his best place. I'm not saying that from sourcing. I'm just saying that from my own personal opinion.
Cody Fajardo finished second in the CFL this past season with a quarterback rating of 105.6. Davis Alexander was one spot behind him at 104.9. So when someone is capable of entering the same offense, same system, same receivers, same running back, same everything, and producing at the same level as you, why would anybody blame a team for making that change when the other guy is younger, less expensive, and has had fewer injuries? And by the way,
it's hard to take, though, man. We got to remember these guys are people.
But let's also remember, why did Cody Fajardo get an opportunity back in the day? And that's because there was somebody in front of him who was 5 years older and had more injuries and was making way more money, and a team decided, you know what? Let's go with Cody Fajardo. Now, he was a backup in Toronto and BC before he really got a shot in Saskatchewan in 2019, which only came because Zach Kolaris got hurt. So, yes, it sucks when you are the old guy who has been banged up and had injuries and missed time and played through stuff. I fully get that, fully appreciate that. but you need to keep the perspective in line. Every young quarterback got an opportunity because an older quarterback got pushed out. So you were once the beneficiary of that process. You're now on the other side of the coin. Yes, it sucks, but the system has also benefited you previously. And I think Cody needs to keep that in mind because his career is not over. He played at a high level. I'm sure there's lots of teams who would be happy to have him as, we'll call it, a 1B type situation. If I'm the Edmonton Elks and we're not bringing back McLeod Bethel Thompson, I think having a guy like Cody could be beneficial if something happens to Trey Ford. Trey Ford has not been able to stay healthy yet so far in the CFL. I don't know if he can play 18 games. We don't know that yet. I'm sure there are other squads who would potentially want to have him in as an experienced guy. I think Montreal is, I agree with you, Justin, probably the best spot for him. But regardless, Trevor Harris is a guy who had to take his lumps in this very similar situation, right? He was going to free agency. There were no starting spots available. He ended up going to Montreal as the 1B behind Vernon Adams Jr. And since then, since he did that, he has been back to a number one guy. It's possible for Cody Fajardo to do that. I just don't like necessarily reading these quotes that sound a little bit pity party-ish. I'll call it that. It's a little bit pity party-ish for me when at the end of the day, Cody Fajardo has made millions of dollars in this league. He has won a Grey Cup as a starter. He's been a Grey Cup MVP. I'm pretty sure he has a ring from Toronto as well. Two Grey Cups, one as a starter. He's got a Grey Cup MVP. Yeah, it sucks to get pushed out, but use that as fuel to push back in. Don't complain to the media 2,000 kilometers away.
The key date in all of this, January 15th, Cody Fajardo has a $200,000 roster bonus due. So the Alouettes are going to have to make a decision by that time. Do they agree on a renegotiated contract with Cody Fajardo in his camp? Do they end up potentially trading him to a team? Like you said, you would imagine Edmonton could have some interest. Or do they release him and then he can become an early free agent? Lots to keep an eye on in this situation. As always, keep it tuned to 3downnation.com for the latest.
A number of top free agents have signed back with their respective teams, including Davis Alexander, Tony Jones, Trevor Harris, Stanley Bryant, and of course, Trey Ford. From the 200-ish names that have come available or could still come available, who would be your top five?
Hodge, you know I am absolutely atrocious with rankings and lists. Like, it takes me forever. That's why I've removed myself from a lot of these. So I'm just going to talk about some players that I like and who I think could have interest and potentially move. Okay. Let's say, for example, you know, I saw a piece out there and I'm not going to say where it was because I don't want to necessarily single it out, but about Winton McManus. All right. Winton McManus told me at the Grey Cup rally, essentially, that Toronto's his second home. Like, he's not leaving. Okay, I know he's a great player and some other teams would like to get their hands on him. But do you think Ryan Dinwiddie's going to let his defensive leader, who has helped this team win two out of the last three Grey Cups, walk out of Toronto? There's no way. So when I look at these names, that's the first thing that I think of. You know, Justin McInnes would kind of be in that mold. Like, the BC Lions are going to want to re-sign that guy. He was the CFL receiving yards leader. Unless the price is just way too much where they're going to have to make adjustments in other areas, it's hard for me to see Justin McInnes leaving, especially when you want to give Nathan Rourke a legitimate number one receiver. And oh, by the way, for marketing purposes, have a cool Canadian to Canadian tandem that you can go out there and sell to the fans. I think that's great. The one to me that would be, you know, I guess among my top five, if you really want to get a top five from me, Hodge,
that was
would be
question.
Tyrell Ford. Yeah, I'm not going to give you five, but I'll talk about one. Would be Tyrell Ford, Canadian guy who's already getting NFL interest, has multiple NFL workouts coming. He could potentially be in the NFL, okay? But if the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are not willing to pay up for this cat, he is going to reset the market at the cornerback position. He is that good. He was just behind Roland Milligan Jr. for the CFL's interception lead. And Roland Milligan Jr. won the CFL's Most Outstanding Defensive Player, by the way. And I know I think it was J.C. Abbott, maybe even you, Hodge, were pounding the table for Tyrell Ford to be a part of that discussion, which I think was on point. So that's one of the guys that's most intriguing to me. And no, you're not getting a top five. Sorry, not sorry.
Well, I have a top five list because I'm a good boy and I do my homework. McManus is on my list. Tyrell Ford is on my list. Justin McInnes is on my list. And yes, your point about some guys probably not actually being available is well taken. That being said, every year there's at least one shock, right? There's a guy who ends up signing back with a team and nobody thought that was going to happen. Or there's a guy who ends up leaving a team that nobody thought they would ever depart, right? That does happen. Do I expect Quinton McManus to be back with the Argonauts in 2025? Yes. That being said, he does deserve to be on this list. He is one of one for me right now in the CFL in terms of linebacker play. He might be my number one defensive player in the CFL, period.
Ooh,
no disrespect to Roland Milligan Jr., who won that award this year, was sensational. No disrespect to Jake Ceresna in front of him, who's an unbelievably disruptive defensive tackle. No disrespect to any other guys in this league, but to me, Quinton McManus might be the number one guy. He does it all. He can drop back into coverage, is excellent there. He can rush the passer. He has such a good tackle. So physical, so long, so strong. Like, he is, in my view, if I could pick a defensive player in the CFL to build my system around, I would probably pick Quinton McManus in the middle. Somebody else who's on my list who I don't think it's talked about enough is Martez Ivey. I thought Martez Ivey, left tackle at Edmonton, was the best offensive lineman in the CFL this past season. He was not nominated for the award. I thought that was a mistake. No disrespect to Logan Ferland or Ryan Hunter, who ended up winning it. But I thought Ivey was sensational. Now, I think he'll be back at Edmonton. He's got good relationships there. But he is somebody who is going to need to get a big old payday because that's something he deserves. And I also think Janarian Grant deserves mentioning here as a top five free agent. He showed that it was not Winnipeg's system that made him successful. He replicated that success in Toronto, stayed healthy for most of the season, and especially come playoff time, has shown that he is a true difference maker. He had a punt return touchdown in the 2022 Grey Cup, albeit in a losing effort, but he also had one in the East Final this year. If he doesn't return that punt for a touchdown, the Toronto Argonauts are not Grey Cup champions. They don't even get to that game. So he is, I think, someone who is a one of one, I would call him, in the CFL. He is a returner. No disrespect to some of the other returners who have done great things, but he, to me, has the most ability to flip the field at any given time, to score from anywhere. And yeah, he is entering his 30s, but to me, unbelievable impact maker at a position that I often think goes overlooked. Returner in the Canadian Football League is a very important position. He is absolutely sensational. The rest of my list, by the way, is guys you mentioned. Justin McInnes, who I think could follow Vernon Adams Jr. to BC, or to Calgary. I don't think it's a guarantee he's back in BC. And Tyrell Ford, who, and I don't know if this is a hot take, I do not expect to be back in Winnipeg. The Bombers do not have a history of paying defensive backs. I wouldn't be surprised if he joined his brother Trey in Edmonton. One of the reasons I say that, we know that last offseason, thanks to your reporting, Justin, that Brady Oliveira was offered $275,000 a year on a two-year contract to Hamilton. The GM there at the time, Ed Hervey, he's now the GM at Edmonton. I was led to believe that that offer came essentially because Ed didn't feel like his team had enough Canadian talent. And if you're now the GM of the Edmonton Elks, yes, there are some good Canadians there, but first of all, from a marketing perspective, having the Ford brothers there, I think is a genius stroke. But then also, how do you upgrade your starting Canadians? Well, you bring in one of the best defensive backs in the CFL, regardless of passport, in Tyrell Ford, who, though he's yet to get the opportunity to do it in the CFL, can also be an excellent returner if you want him to be.
Some other guys that popped to mind for me, Hodge, and you mentioned, it's kind of funny, the Bombers not paying defensive backs, but Evan Holm is up to bat. That is, you've talked about this too, an ideal Mike O'Shea kind of guy. Yes. And I could see them potentially ponying up for him. Plus, some people would argue he plays a more impactful position than cornerback because he plays that strong side halfback spot oh so well. I think he would be coveted by you know, just about every team around the CFL if he actually got to free agency. You know, another name that I watched up close and personal in Saskatchewan was Jameer Thurman, but I just can't envision him not being with Corey Mace and continuing that continuity on defense there with him being the leader. So those are the kind of guys, you know, that jump to mind for me. Another one would be, and I know he's a running back, so JC would argue this, but Kadeem Carey, no doubt, was very impactful for the Toronto Argonauts during the season, stayed healthy for all 18 regular season games. As he talked about, he had issues doing that in Calgary because he felt like he wasn't as well taken care of. That article is up at 3downnation.com if you want to check it out. He was impactful in the playoffs. I think he's a tough physical runner who still has a lot to give. I could see him being coveted by other CFL teams if he does not re-sign with the Argonauts.
Regardless, I'm very interested to see how free agency stacks up. I think we're going to hit a bit of a lull right now in terms of re-signings because generally there's a bit of a Christmas break. But come January, the money rolls over. So I think before free agency officially opens on February 11th, about 6 weeks leading up to that, there should be plenty of news. And obviously, as always, stay tuned to 3Down Nation for all the latest.
Yes, sir. Hodge, you wrote a column questioning the CFL's illegal interference penalty following the controversial moment that played out in this year's Grey Cup. Why do you feel that the league should change this rule?
Because it makes no sense. It doesn't make any sense. Like, this is silly to me. And the reason I bring this up, and by the way, I'll address this really quickly. I got so many comments from people claiming one of two things. One is like, well, you're only saying this because it hurt the Bombers. Well, it didn't really hurt the Bombers. Willie Jefferson got an interception two plays after this happened, and the Bombers still lost by 17 points. This did not affect the outcome of the Grey Cup, and I wrote that in the damn column. So it did not affect the outcome of the game. Secondly, I had a bunch of people saying, well, how did you not know this rule? I've always known this rule. Well, I've watched like 1,000 CFL games, and in the press box, everybody seemed shocked. And I mean, I was sitting in front of Daryl Davis. Daryl has been alive for 200 years, okay? Daryl, I don't believe, knew this rule. Nobody in the press box seemed to know this rule. And Kyrie Wilson, who I talked to after the game, who has been in the league for 8 years, did not know the rule. So if you knew the rule, congratulations.
I knew the rule. You know why?
Well, because of a playoff game that I know you're going to talk about. Yes. You want to do that now or in a bit?
No, you go.
Okay, I'll keep going on a roll. So the rule is that if while a ball is live, one player interferes with another player trying to recover it, that the non-offending team gets the ball and an automatic first down. It's one of only four penalties in the CFL that results in an automatic first down. And I think that the non-offending team should absolutely still get the ball. But to me, the automatic first down part is a huge problem. It's obviously a problem on a blocked punt. Like in this situation, the Argonauts were, it was third and 19, and they lost 19 yards. And they got a first down because Kyrie Wilson took this penalty. Granted this penalty. Oh, and the other thing, I talked to Steve Daniel, the stats guru at the CFL. This penalty was called one time during the regular season in 2024. So again, if you knew the rule with an automatic first down, congratulations. But it's a once a year penalty, which maybe means it's not that important. I don't know. I think it's important. To me, what needs to change is the automatic first down part of it. If it is second and 10, let's say, and the center fires the ball over the quarterback's head and they end up losing 26 yards, which would set up third and 36, I don't think that the offense should get an automatic first down if a defensive player shoves an offensive player trying to make the recovery. Like, that to me is crazy. I don't think an automatic first down should be awarded. And I thought that this reflected somewhat negatively on the CFL, given that so many casual fans who never watch any CFL games except for the Grey Cup saw this and didn't think it made sense or thought the rule was silly. I certainly think the rule is silly. In my opinion, it should change. And Justin, I know that you agree with me.
Oh my goodness, do I ever. Okay, we are playing football, right? How do you move the football up and down the field, Hodge? You hit people and move people for other people who may or may not have the football, okay? Usually have the football. But in this instance, I just can't fathom why this is even a rule in football, okay? I'll set the scene. 2007 Yates Cup, University of Guelph, Alumni Stadium, over 10,000 fans screaming in the house. The Griffins taking on the hated rival Western Mustangs. And my guy, Grant McDonald, has the same situation happen. I can't remember the exact play, who he hit, what went down, but there was, I just can't even believe that's still a rule. It's so stupid. This play happens, okay? He does the same thing that your boy Kyrie Wilson did. Knock somebody out of the way. Griffins jump on the ball. We think we're about to go in for a touchdown, getting the ball inside the 5-yard line, okay? All of a sudden, because of the automatic first down and the stupidity of this rule, the Mustangs are at midfield. Like, this changed the entire football game. And Western, to your point, I don't even think realized that this was a possibility that they were going to get the football back and not only get the football back, but get a first down and have it at midfield. Like, it's absolutely absurd. We are playing football. It is a violent contact collision sport, whatever you want to call it. So I am, you know, somewhat okay because we want to have player safety and not having somebody take an open field hit while they're going for the football. But the football in the game of football is the most valuable thing. How are you not allowed to scrap, fight, and claw for that sucker when it's on the ground? I will never know. Whoever created this rule, I would like to have a little conversation with to try to understand how this ever even got in the football rule book. But it's ridiculous. Do away with it. There shouldn't even be a penalty for this because we're playing football, bro. This ain't flag football. This ain't touch football. This is contact collision football. When the ball's on the ground, outside of, you know, a face mask or a block from behind, anything within the rules of the game should go. So it's simple, concise, fix the rule. Because, Hodge, even though you mentioned, and I don't want you taking flack, so I'll say this, that it didn't necessarily hurt the Bombers, it was a potentially game-changing play. And one that I don't think should be hurting a football team. You should be rewarded for causing a turnover.
I do think that there should be a penalty for illegal interference because I don't want to see guys suplexing opponents so that their teammate can recover the ball.
That's like, what I'm saying. Within the rules of football. If it's within the rules of football, but you're not out there suplexing people, it's fine.
Okay, but if a player illegally shoves a guy from behind and recovers the ball themselves,
you can't block from behind in football.
Yeah, but in that case, so is it a block from behind penalty, but the team that recovered still gets the ball, or does it go to the non-recovering team because they were interfered with? Because if so, like if the ball doesn't go to the non-defending team, then as a coach, aren't you just coaching all your guys, hey, if the ball is on the turf, do whatever you can to stop any opposing player from getting the ball, and we'll deal with the 10-yard penalty as long as we get possession?
That's a great question.
Like, that to me is the spirit
of the rule.
As long as it's within
the rules of the game, you make a good point, though.
Because that's I would assume, the origin of the rule. So the way I would like the rule to go is if illegal interference takes place, the non-offending team still gets the ball. That remains exactly the same. But maybe instead of an automatic first down, you replay the down and we'll call it 10 yards up from where the infraction took place. So in this case, the Argonauts would have gotten possession of the ball because of illegal interference, and they would have scrimmaged 10 yards up from the spot of the foul. So instead of 38 yards, it's 28 yards. And they get to replay 3rd and 28. So in other words, they get the chance to punt the ball away. Or if in the previous instance that I used, the ball goes flying over the quarterback's head on 2nd down, they lose a bunch of yards. They get some of those back on the 10-yard penalty, but they still have to scrimmage 2nd and very long. They're not just automatically given a 1st down because arbitrarily somebody pushed somebody when they shouldn't have. So that to me is my thought, because you don't want coaches telling their players to take cheap shots on opponents when the ball is on the turf.
No cheap shots well, within the rules of the game.
Fair. But anyways, this automatic first down business doesn't make sense to me at all. For the record, I did ask Mike O'Shea about this, and it's relevant because he serves on the CFL's rules committee. He is theoretically one of the people who could bring about change on this rule. I'm just a talking head. He said, quote, "The team that fumbled should have the opportunity to field the ball cleanly and make the next decision. If they're not given that opportunity through an illegal act, through a penalty, then that's the outcome of the penalty. My job is to coach it better. There's a lot of variables or outcomes that could come from them not being interfered with and pick up the ball." So I think the easy answer for me is to say, yeah, change the rule. I don't think that's the right thing to do. So he doesn't want to change the rule, even though it arguably hurt his team. Fair enough for Mike O'Shea. To me, the automatic first down thing is the part that needs to change. It doesn't make sense.
Thinking about it with the great questions that you posed, and this is the type of discussion that I hope goes on with the CFL's rules committee involving Mike O'Shea, would be that as long as it's something that is legal within the game of football, you can do when the ball's on the ground, right? If you're not hitting somebody from behind, you're not cracking back on somebody, any type of dangerous, you're not horse collaring anybody, or as you said, suplexing somebody, then I feel like it's fair game. And the turnover should stand, right? If there's an interception and there's a block in the back after the interception,
true.
When the defense is trying to return it, defense keeps the ball. You know, same thing on a fumble recovery. Something that happens after the recovery of the football can still be penalized. You're right. The first down part of it needs to absolutely be gone because it's completely ridiculous. And again, it changes the complexion of the game without honoring the rules of the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, even if it just stayed, you know, it was repeated down, right? If you fumble on second down and the opposition interferes with you trying to recover it, you get to scrimmage, but it's still second down, right? That is even a meaningful change, but we'll see. I doubt this is something that the CFL addressed this offseason, but I wrote the column because I politely disagree. I think it is a small rule. It's a rarely used rule, but the goal should always be to make the rule book better every offseason. So I hope it's something they address. We'll have to wait and see. Canadian quarterback Curtis Work leads the University of Indiana into the college football playoff against Notre Dame on December 20th. Justin, what are your expectations for that game?
You know, I think Curtis Work is going to go into this game and play well, especially with the Ohio State experience. I don't want to say behind him, but now that he went into that environment, the horseshoe there, they looked really good in the opening drive, but then didn't keep that up throughout the rest of the game as Ohio State ran away with it. I think that was great experience for him and the Hoosiers to now have to go to Touchdown Jesus and Notre Dame's home field to play in the first round of the CFP. And there's some interesting CFL and Canadian tie-ins here with Curtis Rourke. His offensive coordinator, Tino Sunseri, and he talked about being able to actually discuss Canadian football in an intelligent way with Tino Sunseri because he understands all the rules of the game, whereas some of his other teammates and coaches, he would have to explain those little nuances to. His brother, Nathan Rourke, has obviously been an influence in him in terms of helping him make the decision to go from Ohio University to Indiana and talking to him throughout that process. Shout out to Rob Williams, who was a guy that helped, let's say, reimagine Nathan Rourke's delivery to make him a high percentage passer in the Canadian Football League after he was sub 60 at Ohio. Well, he's worked with Curtis Rourke as well out in British Columbia. I really like what Rob Williams is doing from that standpoint. And then Hodge, the one that stands out most to me as Curtis Rourke has been on this run with Indiana, he's been absolutely sensational. Touchdown interception ratio off the charts. Is the fact that he's changing the narrative, and people are going to be like, yeah, dunks on his soapbox again, but it's real, about Canadian quarterbacks leading big-time NCAA Division I programs. Now, some people in the States might laugh and say, well, Indiana isn't exactly big-time, but they've played themselves into being a big-time program thanks to Curtis Rourke and their head coach, Kirk Cignetti, and the rest of the Hoosiers with what they've done this season. So he's changing and making believers out of American coaches that a Canadian quarterback can lead your football team as a high-level starter to the CFP and be at least in the conversation for a national title. And with the way that the Hoosiers have played this season, you know, I think that they could actually make a run here. Some people might laugh at that, but they have played against, you know, high-level competition on the road, for example, beating Michigan and Michigan State. Those are a couple games that stick out to me. People will say, well, Michigan isn't the same Michigan when Jim Harbaugh was there and when they were winning the national title just a year ago, but it's still Michigan. It's still the big house. You're still going into Michigan State and you're still going into some of these other Big Ten schools and beating them or beating them at your house. And there's one game in particular that I'll look at, and that was when Nebraska came to town and Curtis Rourke, yeah, he got the thumb injury, which is seemingly all good, by the way, now. They beat the Cornhuskers really bad. And then I believe it was a week later, if I have my timing right, the Cornhuskers played Ohio State in a relatively close game. So let's not just count the Hoosiers out because they got blown out at Ohio State near the end of the season.
It's interesting, right? I mean, this has been one of the best seasons by a Canadian player in NCAA history, Curtis Rourke. The only blemish, really, I mean, he finished the season 27 touchdown passes, 4 picks. That is an unbelievable.
Dude, that's insane.
It's an unbelievable ratio.
Led the Big Ten, I'm pretty sure, in touchdown passes.
I believe he did too. He should have been first team all Big Ten. Wasn't.
Dylan Gabriel's pretty good though, but I get it.
The only blemish on his resume this year was the Ohio State loss. He went 10-1, by the way, as a starter. The loss came 38-15. At Ohio State. And for context, Ohio State finished number one in the country defensively in points allowed. They averaged only 10.9 per game, which is unbelievable. They also finished first against the pass at 241 yards per game and first in total defense at 241 yards per game and first against the pass at 144.3. So this defense from the Buckeyes was truly unbelievable. Yes, it still got the best of Curtis Rourke on that particular day, but then he followed that up with a 66-0 win against Purdue. 6 touchdowns, no interceptions, 349 yards in that one. So I will say this about the college football playoff, not that I want to turn this into a college football podcast. I do think that having 12 teams in the tournament is silly. They're just trying to be basketball at this point. That being said, it is exciting that Curtis Rourke is getting this opportunity. Indiana was deserving of one of the top 12 spots for sure. They are the 10 seed. Notre Dame is the 7 seed. So clearly, yes, Notre Dame is favored coming into this one. That being said, Notre Dame is not Ohio State. They averaged 55 yards more allowed per game this season and 3 more points allowed per game this season defensively. So still a top defense in the FBS, but not a defense that is on the same level as Ohio State. So I don't love the Hoosiers' chances, but I give them a shot. And a good performance in this game, I think, will only further improve Curtis Rourke's NFL draft stock, which has certainly gone up over the course of the season as he has played his first formerly Power 4, now or formerly Power 5, now Power 4 season following a 5-year run at Ohio University. If he continues to play well into the college football playoff, especially against some top defenses, that should only help him all the more. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2012, the Hamilton Tiger Cats fired head coach George Cortez. The longtime CFL assistant had 4 Grey Cup rings, including one as the offensive coordinator with the Calgary Stampeders, which he won in 2008. The Tiger Cats went 6-12 under Cortez, who was let go with 3 years remaining on his contract. Cortez was quickly scooped up as the offensive coordinator in Saskatchewan, where he won his 5th Grey Cup just 11 months later. Dunk, if I remember correctly, you were pretty close with this team in 2012 and George Cortez was the head coach. What do you remember about his 1-year tenure with the Tabbies?
Dude, that's winding back the clock a little bit, and I should probably remember, but I think I've had a few too many hits to the head. I just remember thinking it was surprising that even though he had signed a longer term contract, that he was gone so fast. And it's such a CFL moment, as you laid out, that he goes to Saskatchewan and helps them win a Grey Cup. Like, how images or people are viewed in this league and even in professional sports can change so quickly.
That they can. I do, if I remember correctly from the reporting at the time, which would have been done by former three-downer Drew Edwards, one of the qualms that like a lot of people had with his tenure in Hamilton is he had the players running the bleachers. Like, there was some really old school mentality there. Now, it should be noted that George Cortez is now 73 years old. So he was in his 60s when he got this opportunity as a head coach in Hamilton. That being said, I don't think you can ask modern athletes to run the stairs like you would have back in, like, you know, the 60s and the 70s. But regardless, Cortez would certainly be someone on a list of amazing assistant coaches who just didn't quite pan out as head coaches. Though, that being said, he only got 1 year. Maybe they would have been great in 2013 had he had the opportunity to remain as the head coach there. If I remember correctly, the offense that season at Hamilton certainly was good, with Chris Williams being their team MOP as kind of a burgeoning star returner. It just didn't quite work out for George Cortez. Actually, okay, they put up 538 points that year. That was the most in the East Division. Just didn't translate to enough wins.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. Rookie Ottawa Redblack sensation Khalil Pimpleton worked out for the Cleveland Browns last week. Do you see him getting an NFL contract this offseason?
I think if he wants one, there will probably be an opportunity available to him. We saw Tyreek McAllister get an opportunity last offseason as a very dynamic kind of running back, receiver, returner. Khalil Pimpleton 100% fits that mold. Chuba Hubbard became the second Canadian player ever to rush for 1,000 yards in the NFL this past weekend, reaching the milestone in his fourth season with the Carolina Panthers. How special has his year been?
It's been very special and ultra rare. The fact that he joins Ruben Mays as the only Canadians to rush for over 1,000 yards in the NFL is absolutely unbelievable. And I want to give a quick shout out to MyFitnessPal because I was fortunate to be there live to see this game. And I was telling some of the Americans how good Chuba Hubbard was and about some of the history and that he was going to potentially have the shot to go over 1,000 yards. So I was fortunate to see it in person. And honestly, I was more excited to see Chuba Hubbard than Saquon Barkley, who also in that same game set a single season franchise record for the Philadelphia Eagles in terms of rushing yards. But Chuba Hubbard, I think for whatever reason, you know, perhaps outside of Edmonton and him going to Bev Facey High School, is underrated as a star in our country. This guy is among, and this is no joke, the elite running backs in the National Football League. You look at where he ranks. He is in the top 10 among all running backs this season in the NFL for rushing yards. He's a guy that the Carolina Panthers decided to sign to a long-term contract and committed over $30 million to. Like, Chuba Hubbard has proven this season that he can be a feature number one back and carry the load on a young football team that is improving. The Panthers had a chance to win that football game. They were close with the Chiefs a couple weeks ago, pushed them to the brink. And I really feel like Chuba Hubbard has been a large reason why this team, despite some losses, has an arrow pointing up for the future. Jim Mullen has been named the new vice president of the International Federation of American Football, IFAF. I was just going to say IFAF. It's easier, but we should say what it is. Is that a smart move by the Federation?
Yes. Jim Mullen was the president of Football Canada for 6 years. Did some great things. I look forward to seeing what he does on the international stage. New Hamilton Tiger Cats GM Ted Gavaya said he's not numb to the team's CFL-long 25-year Grey Cup drought. Do you think he'll eventually bring a championship back to Steeltown?
This is nothing against Ted, okay? But I have to see it to believe it there. Because there's been a lot of times where this team has been oh so close. Ticats fans know all too well that I got to see it, man. I think he's got a great resume, the background to do it, having been with Winnipeg for them going to five straight Grey Cups, winning two of those. That's the kind of pedigree you want. Also, him being from the area in Burlington, Ontario, born and raised there, he knows what it means. So he's going to put everything into accomplishing that goal. Hodge, you reported that the University of Manitoba has shortened its list of football head coach candidates down to 4. Who do you think ultimately gets the job?
I think it'll be Stan Pierre, who's been the defensive coordinator now for close to 20 years. That being said, it's interesting to see the last 4. And if you haven't read the article, please find it on 3downnation.com. But see who the 4 finalists are. Stevenson Bone out of the University of British Columbia, the only external candidate at this point, or non-Manitoba candidate, I could put it. That's an interesting one, especially considering how young he still is. Former U Sports quarterback Mason Nias has joined his alma mater as the assistant head coach at the University of Saskatchewan. Is he the right fit for the job?
It absolutely is. This guy is somebody who Scott Flory felt like was going to be a head coach early on in his university football playing career. Felt like he operated, you know, as a coach on the field, as a quarterback who took the Huskies, I believe it was, to 2 Vanier Cups in a row. Just couldn't quite get it done in some tough matchups there where they lost to Western and then Laval. But, you know, he's arguably, and I'm a little bit younger, but I think the best quarterback that program has had there, at least in my time covering Canadian university football. So I love this move for all sides. Rene Paradis is back for 2 more years with the Calgary Stampeders after signing an extension. Will he make the Canadian Football Hall of Fame someday?
I think it's possible. He is 8th all-time in CFL scoring, and he's going to move up that list over the next couple of years with this latest extension. So I'm not going to say yes, but I certainly think there is a decent shot at this point. Christian Matt retired from the CFL following a 14-season run with the Montreal Alouettes along the offensive line. How will you remember him?
Dude, this guy was, you know, I don't want to say this in disrespect, but he was under the radar in the sense that he's maybe not the most boisterous guy in the media, but he had the respect of his teammates and he knew the game so well. If you listen to him talk, you know, especially I remember during Grey Cup week leading into the 2023 CFL Championship, with which he won with the Alouettes, was a big part of it. About the game, it was in such a smart way. You know, I think there could be potential for him there if he wanted to be a coach in the future. But this guy was, you know, a quintessential Canadian offensive lineman who played at a high level for this team for a long time. And you like to see a guy playing for just one franchise for his entire career. Maven Maurer did an exclusive interview with our own JC Abbott about being the first openly transgender professional football player. What did you take away from it?
I thought it was a tremendous interview. I fully commend Maven and, of course, JC for this story. I was proud to publish this story on 3downnation.com. I loved how Maven talked about going back to BC this past season, said that 98% of her former teammates were accepting of her new identity. I wish that our reception had been up to 98% positive, but it was still a lot more positive than it was negative. The only other thing I'll add, we got a bunch of comments from people saying, well, who cares about this stuff? This is not a story, whatever. Well, it's going to be one of our most top 10 read stories of the year. So obviously, if you don't care about this story, that's fine. That's your opinion. But the average person apparently does, because this is going to be one of our top stories of the year. Thank you to Maven for sharing her story. And kudos to our very own JC Abbott for writing what was, I think, a brilliantly done story. On that note,
well said, my man.
We thank you, as always, for listening to the 3 Down Nation podcast. We will see you next week for our last episode of 2024. Let's get it.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.